three areas of communication, think through what communications are likely to take place or which you need to set up or ask for. Then, for each one, make an entry in the comms plan. Identifying inbound communications. 1. Inbound communications can be from outside the organization or from within the organization, but outside your project, such as from other projects. Some of this information may be sent automatically, but you need to think about who'll receive it, and in other cases, it won't arrive unless you specifically ask for it. You may need to include business information, such as new policies, financial information, inter-project information, such as new risks, staff resource information. 2. Circulating information within the project. You can think of internal communications within the project as being at two levels. The first is communications between the sponsor or steering committee and the project manager, and the second is between the project manager and the team leaders or team members. You can include change control information, direct communications to the project manager such as problem reporting, financial information, product development information, progress information. 3. Sending information out of the project. Think about the following areas: business case information and updates, financial information, operational information such as delivery dates, progress information, stakeholder information. The comms plan is simply a list of the communications that will take place in the project and how they will be conducted. You can see most communications coming, but others come to light as the project progresses, so the comms plan must be kept up to date. For some communications, you may also need to include details of an agreed format, such as with the layout of a dashboard for a project progress report. Communication name, an easily recognizable name such as Team Progress Report. Security, you may not need this heading for your project, but a surprisingly high proportion of projects do. It's not just classified data within government, but sensitive information involving clients or company plans, or privacy in the context of financial or medical records. Recipients, who'll receive the communication. Producer, who'll be responsible for the communication. Content, the information content decided or agreed for the communication. Frequency, how often the communication will be made. This may be regular, such as weekly or monthly, on demand as the need arises, such as with problem reporting, or fixed to a particular event, such as an end of project report being at the end of the project. Media, how the communication will be made, such as phone call, email, website entry, or business presentation. Data collection, how and when the data for the report are collected. This collection may have to be done sometime in advance of the communication and involve resources beyond the person responsible for the communication, the producer. Chapter 15. Closing the project. One characteristic that distinguishes a project from business-as-usual work is its distinct end. The point at which all work is complete, the results are achieved, of course, and reviewed, and the project team disbanded. However, with your next assignment demanding attention, you may need to show determination in order to finish the project properly. Not bringing your projects to full closure hurts both the organization and the people who performed the work. When you don't assess the extent to which your project achieved the desired outcomes, you can't determine whether you conceived, planned, and performed the project well. Furthermore, team members don't have a chance to experience closure, achievement, and a job well done. This chapter shows you how to close your project successfully by finishing all substantive work, performing the final administrative tasks, and helping team members complete their association with your project and move on. Most projects run their full course, but occasionally you may need to stop a project early. The early closure is a sort of crash stop if something goes significantly off target or the project isn't needed anymore. In a crash stop situation, still look to see what can be used from the project. It's often the case that something can be saved and used so that not all the effort is wasted. It may even be worth finishing some of the products if they're almost complete and could then be used. Projects should have a clear start and a clear finish. If you follow the product-based planning approach, you know when the main work of the project is over because all of the deliverables are complete. You now have some close-down work to do, which needs planning. The time to start thinking about project closure is when you're setting up the project in the first place. However, be aware that you may not be able to plan the detail until you get close to closure and can see exactly what's needed. If you wait until the end of your project to start thinking about its closure, it may be too late to gather all the necessary information and resources. You have two basic options open to you for how to fit closure to project stages. Have a closure stage that runs after the final products have been delivered. Make the shutdown work part of the final delivery stage. If you're delivering a project to someone else, you need to be absolutely clear on how the project will be handed over at the end. There may be particular conditions for that handover, such as that project deliverables are functioning correctly, but also regarding flexibility. For example, will the customer of the project really refuse to take delivery if the 24-month project comes in 10 days overdue? It's possible that the delivery date is fixed and paramount, but in most cases, you will find there is some flexibility. An argument developed towards the end of a high-profile construction project. The construction company said that the customer should check the building and then it could be handed over. The customer said that the building should be handed over, then they would check it. The argument was finally resolved and narrowly avoided a £2 million court case that was looming to resolve the matter. Such a dispute is inexcusable in a small project, let alone a major one. The handover should be absolutely clear and agreed at the outset and built into the plans. This is extremely easy if you use the product planning approach in which the workflow diagram not only shows the deliverables but also the order in which they occur. So, going back to the construction project, was signed handover document before customer building check report, or vice versa? If your project is shutting down early, perhaps because it's no longer needed because of a change in corporate policy, then you still have some planning to do for closure. The emphasis is slightly different from a planned closure, so consider the following questions for your closure plan. Can any of the project products be salvaged? Is it worth finishing any products? Is a review needed to see whether it could have been spotted earlier that the project was no longer viable or needed? That knowledge could save money in the future. Do you need to warn the organization or individual managers that project resource will be released early? Do you need to warn finance managers that the project budget now won't be fully used? Do you need to stop supplier work prematurely and pay off remaining amounts on the contract? Of course, you'll be using that early shutdown clause you had put into the contract, so you don't have to pay the full amounts. Do you need to tell the stakeholders who wanted the project that it now won't be completed? That may need particular thought and care if some stakeholders needed the project badly and the early closure has significant implications for them. As you approach the end of the project, you need to adjust your closure plan in the light of what's happening in the project and then work them into detail so you know exactly what's involved and what time and resource will be required. Here are some examples of work to include in your plan. Establish what adjustments, if any, are needed to fine-tune the project deliverables and what priority they have. Some changes may be essential and the deliverables won't be properly usable without them. Other things may be cosmetic and nice to have if they can be accommodated. Establish the amount of funding needed for adjustment and its source. If something is a change from the original requirement, which most changes at this point will be, or the products would have failed when tested, then the customer may have to find extra budget unless the remaining change funds are sufficient. Schedule remaining work to adjust products and support user staff in their early use of them. Fix or confirm the date for the final handover and the close of the project. Check any business benefits that are immediately visible at the end of the project. Check the plans for measuring and reporting benefits that won't be visible until after the project is shut down. Identify any elements of project control that will need to be passed forward into the working life of products. This includes version control systems, risk management, and maintenance requirements. Terminate contracts for project work and pass on to the business area any contracts for ongoing supplies and support. This includes authorizing any final payments. Ensure that all support documentation is in place for ongoing maintenance and operations. Ensure that any necessary licenses, permits, or other authorities are in place, ready for handover. Plan the release of project staff, because support requirements will wind down during closure, liaising as needed with their line managers, and then release staff in line with the plan. List any organizational actions that will be needed or which are recommended after the project. This might include picking up on good ideas that the project didn't have time to implement, or adjusting project management standards following experience in this project. Although not necessarily appearing on the official list of project closure work, some sort of project celebration is appropriate for a successful project. It's not only right to thank staff for their part in the success of the project, but it's a great boost to see and celebrate the result of all the effort. Team members can get very concerned when it's first suggested that they move over to work on your project. How team members get back into the mainstream after the project or onto a new project is extremely important. In some organizations, being assigned to a project is seen as a career death sentence. You not only need to make sure that arrangements are in hand for the return of staff, but that these arrangements are carried through. Even if bad things don't happen to team members after a project, they're likely to worry that they will. The transition back to ordinary work needs to be planned and explained. Lay the groundwork for repeating on future projects what worked well on this one and avoiding what didn't by conducting a project evaluation or review. A project evaluation is an assessment of project results, activities, and processes. It contributes to noting lessons learned, both good things and bad things, that will help improve project management on future projects. Avoid the term project post-mortem because it conjures up the image of an autopsy to determine the cause of death. The term alone gives people a very negative outlook and suggests that the evaluation is looking only for problems and culprits. The project review is as much or even more about what went well as what went badly. You can't review properly unless you have something to review against. Right at the beginning of the project, you need to think what you'll review against. Just think about what you want to check at the end of the project and then put in place the things that will enable you to carry out that check, such as benefits, finance targets, meeting deadlines, perhaps key deliveries that need to be made during the project as well as at the end, objectives, what the project is to achieve, productivity levels, quality, risk mitigation. You can conduct a review by going around and talking to people or by a meeting that you can hold in person or by video or in a telephone conference. As always, face-to-face is better, so only resort to other means when you really must. A good review, whether by interview or meeting, requires that you address the right topics and that people share their project thoughts and experiences openly and honestly. As you plan your consultation with others, consider asking about the following issues. Could anything have been done better, faster, or more cheaply? If you did the project again, what would you like to be done differently in the light of this project experience? If you did the project again, what would you like to see done the same way next time because it worked so well? Was anything unnecessary? And if so, was that just because of the way things turned out, or because, on reflection, the activity was over the top from the outset? With any mistakes or misunderstandings, could someone have seen them coming and prevented them, or were they just the sort of things that you can never completely eliminate? Could anything have made your work easier, such as more support or better equipment? With regard to problems during the project, could you have anticipated and planned for them? If so, how? Did you handle them effectively and efficiently when they arose? Did you use the organization's project management systems and procedures effectively? Were any of the organization's project management systems ineffective or inappropriate? If so, should this type of project be exempted from such procedures, or should the procedures be changed for all projects? For many of the review areas, having established at the outset that you'll review them, you then need to set up mechanisms to record the data so that you can review it at the end. Finance is an obvious one, and you'll undoubtedly be recording spending information anyway, but what about quality? And what about team performance? Just how many products did fail test and need rework? Did the teams deliver products within the expected number of staff hours, or was the number of hours significantly less or more? Project review brings to light important information, and missing it out damages the organisation. Project review shouldn't normally be a huge amount of work, but the information that flows out of it can be hugely valuable for future projects. There's a clear and obvious link between project review and learning lessons to be passed on to future projects, but the two aren't the same thing. Some aspects of review, such as whether the project met its objectives, are usually for this project alone. Similarly, lessons learned may be identified and passed on throughout the life of the project, particularly if it is a long one, not just left to the end. Identifying the cause of problems in order to avoid them on future projects is very important, but the main thrust of lessons learned is to see what worked really well and pass on that experience so other projects can benefit. Having learned lessons, you must then pass them on and not just leave them to get dusty along with the other project records in some forgotten corner of a network drive. Future project managers must be able to get at the lessons easily. If benefits are visible at the end of the project, which some may be, no sponsor is going to wait 6 months for some post-project benefits review if there's already some indication as to whether the project has been a success. Many benefits won't be clear for some time. For example, if the project has put some new business process in place and at the end of the project the business staff start to use it, it's no good looking at time savings immediately. Staff will still be going slowly as they learn the new approach. The best time to measure the time saving of the new procedure will probably be in 4 or 6 weeks' time when things have settled down and staff are up to a normal speed of working. While the project is still running, there are either one or two endpoints where you may want to measure and report benefits. Whether there are one or two points depends on whether you have a closure stage or if closure is just at the end of the final delivery stage. When final products are delivered, some benefits may be seen immediately, such as that maintenance time drops as soon as the new machines are commissioned and the old ones are taken out of service, or that customer complaints are dramatically reduced the moment the new delivery procedures start up. You can measure and report such benefits at the end of the final delivery stage, which in some approaches may mark the end of the project. If you have a closure stage, though, it may well be that the 6-week measures can be taken within the life of the project, before final closure, and reported. If benefits will come on stream after the end of a project, either because you don't have a closure stage or because the benefits will take a longer time to become clear, then it's not within the remit of the project to measure and report on them. However, you should make arrangements for such measures and reporting back to corporate management on the eventual level of benefit from the project. It's vital that the organisation does review project benefits systematically, or else poor management decisions may be made in the future. The final part of the closure work is to consider what work needs to be passed on to organisational managers, such as operations staff. The nature of this post-project work varies depending on the nature of the organisation and the project, but here are a few areas to think about. Considering changes to organisational standards and procedures, such as project procedures and risk handling. Making sure that if suppliers delivered substandard items that were temporarily usable, but not correct, that the supplier replaces those items. Incorporating maintenance work. Measuring and reporting benefits that will come on stream after the end of the project. Picking up on good ideas developed during the project, but which the project didn't have time or money to do. Monitoring risk-related work that's ongoing, such as use of dangerous machinery. Enforcing version control. In each case, discuss the work with the person who'll be taking it on to be sure that he's the right person and that he has the capacity to do the job. If there's a problem, discuss it with your sponsor or steering committee, but make sure that it's resolved so that the item isn't left unmanaged. Chapter 16. Using Technology to Up Your Game. A major part of project management is information. Getting it, creating it, storing it, analysing it, and sharing it. But the key to successful project management is using this information to see what's going on in the project and exercise control, and to guide and encourage other people's performance. Technology is providing ever easier and more affordable ways to handle information, and also to help with the work involved in areas such as project planning. For example, computer software allows you to enter, store, and analyze information, and then present the results in professional formats. Email allows written communication with people in remote locations at all hours of the day and night, and video conferencing allows you to talk to them too. Computer scheduling tools allow you to draw up activity networks and Gantt charts much more quickly and easily, but then also help you to make changes easily and rapidly, and so keep the plans up to date. Software for special analyses, project planning, and reporting now looks so good that you may be tempted to believe it's all you need to ensure project success. However, even though the software works effectively and efficiently, it can't ensure that information is appropriately defined, timely, and accurate. In most instances, people record information to support project planning and control, and then they enter the information into a computer. You can set up the software to check for correctness of format or internal consistency, but the software can't ensure the quality and integrity of the data. Suppose you use a computer program to maintain records of work hours that team members charge to your project. You can get time recording software to reject hours that are inadvertently charged with an invalid project code. However, you can't set the package to recognize hours charged to the wrong project with a valid code. Neither can it analyze all information or make project decisions. Software can help you objectively determine the results of several possible courses of action. However, software can't effectively take into account all the objective and subjective considerations that you must weigh up before making a final decision. And software cannot create and sustain dynamic interpersonal relationships. Despite people's fascination with Facebook, email, texts, and other types of social networking, computers can't ensure trusting relationships between people working together on a team. Technology can even make relationships more difficult to develop. Developments such as video communications through Skype and similar services help because they give some ability to see facial expressions and body language, but it's still nowhere near as good as face-to-face communication, and the limited duration of each communication isn't the same as working alongside a colleague in a team room. So how can computer facilities help you during the life of a project? You'll find computer software helpful in three core areas. Office software. This is the standard package of a word processor, spreadsheet, presentation software, and possibly database and contacts functionality. The presentation software gives some graphics capability and perhaps enough for your needs, but you may choose a different package for graphics. Project management software. Well, so-called project management software anyway. The so-called is because the packages are mostly scheduling software to do activity networks, Gantt charts, and resource scheduling. There is much more to project management than that. Communications software. This includes email, but also things like RSS feeds to notify changed information on a website, tweeting, and perhaps more importantly, Skype and its equivalents for video calls. An area where software may be necessary, not merely a benefit, is if you're maintaining a website for your project and need web management facilities. Then again, you may need software support for things like version control, mind map diagrams, and time management. It's pretty obvious where you use some of the software. If you want to do an activity network, you'll naturally be drawn to a project management package. However, some uses aren't so obvious. So this section points out where you might use software applications and where you might use them in more unusual circumstances if you need to or even have to. Office software is important for things like reporting. But remember that a report may be in the form of a presentation to a steering committee or project board where the presentation element of the software will be more than useful. The most common package is Microsoft Office, but there are others. Here's some core software you'll need. Database. Useful for things like a risk register and a project log if you want something with more power than a spreadsheet. Presentation graphics. Useful for reporting and passing on information in the form of a presentation, but the facilities in these packages are powerful for general graphics work too and are great for things like the product planning diagrams. Spreadsheet. Budget information. what-if calculations, and also reporting if you use a dashboard format for progress reports. Interestingly, spreadsheets are widely used for resource planning in larger projects where many project managers find that the project management software just doesn't give them the flexibility and detail they need. You might also hold register overviews on a spreadsheet, such as a summary of information from the risk register. You can even produce an activity network on a spreadsheet, but it's hard work both in creating the network and then keeping it up to date, and project management, scheduling software, is considerably better. Word processor. For written communications, including reporting and document preparation, such as the project charter. You might also produce a project news sheet if you need to keep stakeholders informed of developments and you don't need the sophistication of desktop publishing software. Project management software is a misnomer because the package doesn't help with all of project management or anything approaching it. Really, the tools are scheduling tools and cover activity networks, Gantt charts, and resource planning, including resource leveling. The best known is Microsoft Project, but there are many others. Project scheduling software is generally excellent in what it does, but it can prove very frustrating as well because of the limitations it can impose. As you get used to the software, you quickly learn the tricks to make it display what you want, even if that means telling lies to the software to get the effect you need. On the other hand, though, who'd want to recalculate a hand-drawn 100-task, 2-year duration activity network because a duration changed in week one? Some packages are available that fit with project methods, but be careful to check what they do, what they don't do, and the nature of their support. These tools, for example, generally don't include scheduling functionality, but require you to use something like Microsoft Project alongside them. Some also start at the wrong end. They provide a huge amount of documentation and the boast that the software will help you control it all. A better start is to minimize the documentation and limit it to what you really need, not get help controlling some vast and unnecessary project bureaucracy. A typical project management package allows you to create a hierarchical list of activities and their components, define and store key information about your project, activities, and resources, define activity interdependencies, develop schedules by considering activity durations, activity interdependencies, and resource requirements and availability. Display your plan for performing project activities in a network diagram. Display a schedule in Gantt chart and table formats. Assign people to work on project activities for specific levels of effort at certain times. Schedule other resources for project activities at specified times. Determine your overall project budget. Determine the effect of changes on the project's schedule and resources. Monitor activity start and end dates and milestone dates. Monitor person hours and resource costs. Present planning and tracking information in a wide array of graphs and tables. Project management packages offer further benefits, including the package's functions are linked. For example, if you enter staff availability in the form of personal calendars, the program uses them when developing the schedule and won't allow an activity for a team member to run in a week when she'll be on holiday. Packages typically have a variety of pre-designed report templates. Having pre-designed report templates allows you to use formats that are proven to be effective. It also saves you time and money when preparing and distributing your reports. Before you rush out and buy any project management software, plan how to maximize its capabilities and avoid associated pitfalls. Do the following to help you select and install your software. Be sure you have a firm grasp of project planning and control approaches and techniques before you consider any software. See what software other groups in your organization are using or have used. Find out what they like, what they don't like, and why. If possible, ask someone who already has a copy of the software whether you can spend a few minutes exploring its operation. After the package is on your computer, load a simple project or a small part of a larger project to practice with. That is, enter the activities, durations, interdependencies, resources, and so on. Use only a few of the program's capabilities at first. Determine the effect of small changes on your schedule, print out some simple reports, and so on. Use more capabilities as you get more comfortable with the software and feel the need for the facilities. Consider attending a formal training course after you've become comfortable accessing the software's different capabilities. After you've undertaken these steps, you can effectively use software to support your project planning and control activities. On an ongoing basis, ensure that you obtain all updates and changes to the software and consider purchasing software upgrades that introduce significant new capabilities. Communications problems are a primary cause of project failure, so the whole area of communications in your project justifies some very careful thought. Technology can help with communication, but it can also hinder it, so you need to keep your brain in gear when considering communication. Communications technology is particularly good when it adds something that can't easily be done otherwise, and this section covers 5 examples. A relatively new technology is tweeting using the Twitter social networking service. Having first been associated with teenagers filling their many spare hours with idle chatter, its potential was quickly spotted by other and perhaps more serious users. Organisations, such as political parties in the UK, have been quick to see the value of keeping people in touch, but so have businesses, to keep customers informed of the latest services and offers and to keep their names regularly in front of the customers. In the context of a project, tweeting may be worth considering to keep information flowing to large teams who are spread out geographically, but also as a mechanism for keeping key stakeholders in touch with developments in a fast-moving project environment. Email is powerful and would be more powerful still if it wasn't so widely misused. Disciplined use of email makes for rapid and powerful communication, as you will be well aware. Where you need a meeting, nothing beats face-to-face. But where that's difficult or expensive, then video calls over the phone are great substitutes. You get better communication when you can see people and gauge their reactions in a discussion. With international projects in particular, the video conference is a powerful and economic addition to your communication options. Major players, such as Microsoft, increasingly allow for online collaborative working with their software. An example is with a shared whiteboard, where people can join in remotely to add to diagrams and comment. But collaborative environments often offer shared file storage as well. Collaborative working like this comes second place to working around a whiteboard face-to-face. However, if getting everyone together isn't possible or is prohibitively expensive, then such electronic collaboration is much better than phone calls during which participants can't see diagrams and certainly can't directly draw onto the diagrams. Email is worse with the inbuilt time delay. Using online collaborative environments also retains the shared experience dynamic, where ideas spark backwards and forwards more easily and where participants get more engaged than they would with some form of written response. A useful technology in bigger projects is the web. A website dedicated to the project can be extraordinarily effective both in making information available and keeping people in touch with the project. Part of the advantage of setting up a website relates to the problem of email distribution lists. If you have a website for your project, then you can email your fellow project managers once to say that you have a site, and if they want to know anything about your project, then to go and look on the site. They'll be extremely grateful that you haven't merely added them to yet another email group to pump megabytes of text into their inboxes in case they want to know. Hopefully, they'll be so impressed and appreciative that they'll follow suit and set up websites for their projects and stop sending you trayfuls of email in case you want to know. A second way that a website can be really useful is to keep people in touch with and interested in your project. If you have a public interface or customers who are very interested in how things are going, then a website could be the answer. In terms of project information held on the site, adding an RSS feed makes it even more useful. With RSS, as you're probably aware from your own use of the web, people who are subscribed get notified automatically when something has changed and don't need to keep checking the site themselves. Cloud computing is now with us, and its use is expanding very rapidly. A cloud is where you have data and even software stored centrally by an internet service and you access that data over the internet. Cloud computing is exciting for projects because it makes access to data so much easier working at home as well as in the office, and because it brings with it functionality like computer synchronization. If you store your project data in a cloud, then everyone to whom you give the necessary authority can access it over the internet wherever they are in the world and at any time of the day or night. If you update a file and upload it, then immediately everyone has access to that new version. Many cloud services incorporate synchronization of data. Each computer has a copy of the cloud on its local disk and from time to time will check that the local copy is an exact copy of the folders and files on the cloud. If the local computer has a more recent file, because the user has updated or created something, it will be sent up to the cloud, and if the cloud has a more recent copy or something new, it will be downloaded to that local computer. The speed at which computers are synchronized varies with the service you're using. Some only synchronize at intervals, so there can be a gap before the new file goes up to the cloud, and another gap before other computers check the cloud and download any changes. Other services are almost instantaneous, such as Dropbox, and will push data down where it has changed. It doesn't work by timed checks. Here are three simple guidelines on cloud computing. Backup. Commercial cloud storage is reliable, but don't rely on it. Don't keep a backup copy of your files either. Keep several, and in different places too. Just two sorts of computer hard disk exist. Those that are going to fail, and those that have already failed. Be careful with synchronization. Synchronization is great, but it has a drawback. If some junior team member deletes a file on her local copy of the cloud, that deletion instruction will get transmitted up to the cloud and then onto everyone else's computers, and the file will be wiped out everywhere. The more sophisticated suppliers of cloud services have an archive from which you can retrieve deleted stuff as much as 6 months afterwards. That archive service is valuable, provided you realize in time that something has been accidentally deleted. Watch security. Cloud storage is not 100% secure, even if you have got good access controls. That lack of security can simply be because a rookie team member has written her complicated secure password on a sticky note and stuck it on the wall above her desk. But even if the access and the cloud storage itself is safe, the transmission of data to and from that storage generally isn't. Storing information, such as project plans, is probably going to be fine. But you probably shouldn't put important commercial information on your company's finances that's embedded in the project business case on cloud storage. Powerful, reliable, and highly functional services and software are available for free on both PC and Mac platforms. Software includes freeware, but more significantly, you can download open source software, which is the fruit of collaboration on a huge scale worldwide. A search on the internet can help you find such software and services. New stuff is emerging all the time, but this section gives you a starting place and also provides a few hints on what to look out for. Lots of free tools are highly functional for activity networks, Gantt charts, and resource planning. They're the equivalent of Microsoft Project. You find them for both PC and Mac platforms, and a sophisticated example for the PC is Open Workbench. Internet service providers often give some online cloud storage for free. Other commercial services are paid for, but can be free in two respects. First, you can sometimes get a fairly generous trial period for free, and that period may actually be enough for your project. Apple's MobileMe service currently offers 6 months' use for free. Second, some services like Dropbox give a basic amount of storage for free, but then you pay if you want more. That last option might not sound so good until you see just how generous the free allowance is. It's quite substantial when you're storing things like documents rather than large libraries of music and photographs. Having said that, even if you do want more space, the extra storage is usually reasonably priced and available in increments. Many free packages are impressively functional. These are great if you like mind maps and want to use them for product planning and risk analysis. Many cheap office packages offer word processor, spreadsheet, and graphics programs, but you also have the choice of some free ones. The most widely recognized is OpenOffice, which is available on both PC and Mac platforms. OpenOffice has the advantage that it is very powerful, and it reads in and out of Microsoft Office formats. When looking at the free software, check out the file formats and the import and export features. You need to ensure that you can communicate with other people. It's no good working late into the night at home on an update to your project plan if you can't then load the file into the software at the office. In all cases, when you're shifting data about, do make sure you take on board any security restrictions in your organization. It takes the shine off delivering a really successful project if you then get fired for security violations. In this context, security includes virus checking procedures. Don't think either that viruses don't matter if you're in the happy world of Macs, because, of course, nasty things can find their way into macro-enabled documents as well as programs and operating systems. Using computers can make life much easier for the project manager. It can also make for great time savings. 1. Easy retrieval. For other project staff, not just the project manager, to get at documents quickly, but also to be able to retrieve an older version, which, in passing, means that you should routinely save the different versions of project documents. 2. Fast transmission. A report sent as an email attachment rather than through the mail, internal mail, national or international. 3. Fast update, such as putting new estimates based on recent information into an activity network, then recalculating the critical path before printing off a new version of the plan. 4. Reuse. Storing project documentation, such as plans that might be adapted for future similar projects, so saving time and helping ensure completeness. 5. Template documents. A stock of basic templates for things like budgets and reports that save having to start from scratch for each project. Part 5. The Part of Tens. Chapter 17. 10 Questions to Ask Yourself for Project Planning. When you begin a project, enthusiasm or organizational deadlines or both can make you want to jump in and start working on the detail immediately. However, you know you have the greatest chance of a successful outcome, including delivering the right thing, if you plan out your project before you start the actual work. Answer these 10 questions to be sure you've completely identified all the work your project will require. 1. What are the objectives? A common cause of project problems, to the point of failure, is unclear objectives. Check the following. Exactly what is the project being asked to deliver? What is the primary purpose of the project? Perhaps to speed up delivery to customers, comply with legal requirements, save money, or more than one. Who'll benefit from the project? What would happen if the project wasn't run? 2. Who do you need to involve? Knowing early on who you need to involve allows you to plan for their participation. Think about budget holders, people who hold the purse strings, providers, those providing any staff resource that you need. For example, do you need IT staff input, which may be difficult if the IT department is mostly committed for the next 2 years? Stakeholders, people who have an interest in your project's results. You may need to resolve conflicting objectives. Supporters, people who can help your project succeed. 3. What will you produce? Be clear on what the project is delivering in total, then in more detail as you get into project planning. Make sure that the key players agree the key deliverables or products. You may even produce a few product definitions when sketching out the project, because often people get a much clearer view of what the project is about when they understand what it will deliver. Think through what products you need to generate. Define those products carefully, involving others where necessary. Determine the sequence in which products need to be produced and the dependencies between them. 4. Are there any constraints? Identify all information, processes and guidelines that may restrict your project activities and your performance. When you know your constraints, you can plan effectively to work within them if, for example, they are technical or time constraints, and to minimize their effects on your project if they relate to something like financial or staffing availability. Identify whether any constraints can be challenged. For example, with a technical constraint, you may be able to challenge an instruction to use a certain type of machine if a new machine becomes available that's better and cheaper. 5. What are the assumptions? As soon as you begin thinking about your project, document all conscious assumptions you make about it and think very hard so you can minimize the unconscious ones. 6. What work has to be done? Identify all the activities required to produce your project's products so that you can assign responsibilities for them, develop schedules, estimate resource needs, give specific tasks to team members, and monitor your project's performance. For each activity, specify the following. The work to be done. The processes and steps that each activity entails. Inputs. All people, facilities, equipment, supplies, raw materials, funds, and information necessary to perform each activity. Durations. The number of work periods required to perform each activity. 7. When will each activity happen? Develop a detailed schedule. Duration. The number of work periods required to perform each individual activity. External dependencies, such as on other projects. Interdependencies, what you must finish before you can begin your activity. Resource availability, when you need particular resources and when they're available. 8. Who will do the project work? Knowing who will perform each task and how much effort they'll have to devote allows you to plan for their availability and more accurately estimate the overall project budget. Think about the skills and knowledge needed to build each product, the actual people needed on each activity and any specific roles they may have, such as team leaders and specialists, the amount of time needed by each person, the exact time when people will do their work if they will work less than full time on an activity. Consult with the people who will perform the project tasks to develop this information. 9. Do you need other resources? Identify all equipment, facilities, services, supplies and funds that you need to perform your project work. Specify how much of each resource you need and when. 10. What can go wrong? Don't be taken off guard. Identify risks and develop sensible plans to minimize their negative effects. And remember that some risk actions may be very simple, quick and cheap, but can work to prevent your project coming under unnecessary pressure. Chapter 18. 10 Tips for Writing a Convincing Business Case. A project needs to be justified, not just done for the sake of it. You often need to set down that justification in the form of a business case, which, as the name suggests, explains the case for the project from a business perspective. It's easy to go off track in a business case so that managers in the organization who have the authority to approve the project simply aren't convinced, and so don't give the go-ahead. 1. Starting with a bang. Your project will normally have a number of benefits, and it can really help to start with the best one. Start with a bang. That grabs the attention and gets people on side quickly. Don't exaggerate this benefit, but do let it have its full impact in the way that you write it. For example, this project will save £1 million in reduced wastage in the first 3 years of operation. Notice that the £1 million figure is rather more impressive than saying £333,000 a year. If you think that sounds a bit like a sales pitch, you're right. You need to sell the project idea in order to get the green light. On the other hand, this is a business document, so although you should sell the idea, the business case should contain solid, evidenced business information and not be frothy sales talk. If you're using a format in which the benefits aren't the first thing in the business case, but something like a summary or a management overview is, use the opening of that to make the bang with the biggest benefit. 2. Spelling out the benefits clearly. Spell out the benefits of the project in clear terms that those reading the document can relate to. You can find it all too easy to be convinced of the project yourself within the project perspective, where it all makes perfect sense, but fail to see things as people outside the project see them. If your project is of any size beyond small, then with benefits you need to be particularly aware of the senior management perspective, and specifically the financial management perspective, To a finance director and a managing director, a direct saving is very different to a quantifiable benefit, and again to a non-quantifiable benefit. Direct savings make directors sit up quickly and take notice, so be sure to point these out. 3. Identifying non-quantifiables. You should explain non-quantifiable benefits especially carefully and back up claims of these benefits and your estimates of their significance. Non-quantifiables can be extremely important in business terms, but as hinted in the previous section, senior managers tend to focus on the money. Often, they're less interested in the non-quantifiables. When non-quantifiables are important, explain why. 4. Being prudent. Don't overstate or exaggerate benefits. Remember the financial principle of being prudent and erring on the safe side. If you make huge claims for the project that it can't deliver, it and you will be seen as a failure when those benefits don't materialize. If you slightly underestimate the benefits, you have a margin for error, but also if you slightly exceed them, the project and you will be seen as a success. Once again, you need to strike a balance with this. If you massively understate the benefits, then when your project delivers considerably more, you'll be seen in a bad light for not having set down an accurate business case and not understanding the nature and impact of your project. 5. Using three-point estimating. Sometimes you just can't be sure of the benefits level, or you're in difficulty because some enthusiastic manager has already told everyone that the project won't cost much, will take almost no time at all, and will deliver mind-boggling benefits. To deal with either scenario, you can set down three projections of each benefit: best case, worst case, and then the most likely case. 6. Checking benefits aren't features. If you have a technical interest in the project, you may be rather too focused on the technical aspects rather than the business advantages. Having a 2-nanosecond transmission time through the outer core of the flange assembly may be the latest groundbreaking technology, but it's a technical feature, not a business benefit. In all cases, think, how does this benefit the business? It could well be that the technology represents substantial business benefit, but you must then spell that benefit out. If the faster speed means that production costs will be reduced, then that becomes a business benefit, and one which can be quantified and later measured and proved. 7. Avoiding benefits contamination. Inspirandum coined the phrase benefits contamination to describe projects that claim benefits that are really due to something else outside the project. Financial managers usually have a keen eye for benefits, and if they spot such contamination, then it undermines your credibility and the credibility of the whole business case. Also, if you're claiming benefits that won't actually be delivered by the project, it could lead to the project being approved, when actually that's not the right decision. 8. Making sure you can deliver. When setting down the benefits, make quite sure that they can be delivered. If you're showing savings from the sale of a building, are you absolutely sure that someone wants to buy it? If not, state your assumption that the building will be sold within a reasonable time. In turn, it would be helpful to back up the point with some stats on the average time taken to sell a building of that type in that locality at the moment. 9. Backing up your claims. Where you're claiming business benefits, you should back those claims up with evidence. However, if the evidence already exists, then you can simply reference it. 10. Using appendices. Don't hesitate to use appendices in the business case. You don't need to shove everything into the main body of the document. You may want to use appendices for two reasons. Where you have an organizational standard. In that case, put the extra project-only information in appendices and don't submit them to the finance committee. Keeping the business case simple. If the business case is to be seen by senior managers in particular, it helps enormously to keep it short and simple. Detailed calculations can go into an appendix that readers can dip into if they want to. This has been a John Wiley & Sons production of Project Management for Dummies by Nick Graham and Stanley E. Portney, read by Gareth Armstrong, produced by Heavy Entertainment. Copyright 2011 by John Wiley & Sons Limited. Production copyright 2014 by John Wiley & Sons Limited.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.